when lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed. When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed, and the great star early drooped in the western sky in the night, I mourned, and yet shall mourn with ever-returning spring. Ever-returning spring, Trinity, sure to me you bring, lilac-blooming perennial and drooping star in the west, and thought of him I love. O powerful western fallen star, O shades of night, O moody tearful night, O great star disappeared, O the black murk that hides the star, O cruel hands that hold me powerless, O helpless soul of me, O harsh surrounding cloud that will not free my soul. In the dooryard, fronting an old farmhouse near the whitewashed palings, stands the lilac bush, tall growing, with heart-shaped leaves of rich green, with many a pointed blossom rising delicate, with the perfume strong I love, with every leaf a miracle. And from this bush in the dooryard, with delicate colored blossoms and heart-shaped leaves of rich green, a sprig with its flower I break. In the swamp, in secluded recesses, a shy and hidden bird is warbling a song. Solitary the thrush, the hermit withdrawn to himself, avoiding the settlements, sings by himself a song. Song of the bleeding throat, death's outlet song of life. For well, dear brother, I know, if thou wast not granted to sing, thou wouldst surely die. Over the breast of the spring, the land, amid cities, amid lanes, and through old woods, where lately the violets peep from the ground, spotting the gray debris, amid the grass in the fields, each side of the lanes, passing the endless grass, passing the yellow-speared wheat, every grain from its shroud in the dark brown fields uprisen, passing the apple-tree blows of white and pink in the orchards, carrying a corpse to where it shall rest in the grave, night and day journeys a coffin. Coffin that passes through lanes and streets, through day and night with the great cloud darkening the land, with the pomp of the inlooped flags, with the cities draped in black, with the show of the states themselves as of crepe-veiled women standing, with processions long and winding and the flambeaux of the night, with the countless torches lit, with the silent sea of faces and the unbared heads, with the waiting depot, the arriving coffin, and the somber faces, with dirges through the night, with the thousand voices rising strong and solemn, with all the mournful voices of the dirges poured around the coffin, the dim-lit churches and the shuddering organs, where amid these you journey, with the tolling, tolling bells, perpetual clang. Here, coffin that slowly passes, I give you my sprig of lilac. This dust was once the man. This dust was once the man, gentle, plain, just, and resolute, under whose cautious hand, against the foulest crime in history known in any land or age, was saved the union of these states. When Sherman's armies, long after they left Atlanta, were marching through South and North Carolina, after leaving Savannah, the news of Lee's capitulation having been received, the men never moved a mile without, from some part of the line, sending up continued, inspiriting shouts. At intervals all day long sounded out the wild music of those peculiar army cries. They would be commenced by one regiment or brigade, immediately taken up by others, and at length whole corps and armies would join in these wild, triumphant choruses. It was one of the characteristic expressions of the Western troops, and became a habit, serving as a relief and outlet to the men, a vent for their feelings of victory, returning peace, and so forth. morning, noon, and afternoon, spontaneous, for occasion or without occasion, these huge, strange cries, differing from any other, echoing through the open air for many a mile, expressing youth, joy, wildness, irrepressible strength, and the ideas of advance and conquest, sounded along the swamps and uplands of the south, floating to the skies. There never were men that kept in better spirits in danger or defeat. What then could they do in victory? Said one of the 15th Corps to me afterwards. This exuberance continued till the armies arrived at Raleigh. There the news of the president's murder was received. Then, no more shouts or yells for a week. All the marching was comparatively muffled. It was very significant. Hardly a loud word or laugh in many of the regiments. A hush and silence pervaded all. Ethiopia saluting the colors. Who are you, dusky woman, so ancient, hardly human, with your woolly white and turbaned head and bare, bony feet? Why, rising by the roadside here, do you the colors greet? 'Tis while our army lines Carolina's sands and pines, forth from thy hovel door, thou Ethiopia comes to me, as under doughty Sherman I march toward the sea. Me, master, years 100 since from my parents sundered, a little child they caught me as the savage beast is caught. Then hither me across the sea the cruel slaver brought. No further does she say, but lingering all the day, her high-born turbaned head she wags and rolls her darkling eye, and courtesies to the regiments, the guidons moving by. What is it, fateful woman, so blear, hardly human? Why wag your head with turban bound, yellow, red, and green? Are the things so strange and marvelous you see or have seen? May 28th to 9th. I stayed tonight a long time by the bedside of a new patient, a young Baltimorean, aged about 19 years, WSP, 2nd Maryland, Southern. Very feeble, right leg amputated, can't sleep hardly at all, has taken a great deal of morphine, which, as usual, is costing more than it comes to. Evidently very intelligent and well-bred, very affectionate. Held onto my hand and put it by his face, not willing to let me leave. As I was lingering, soothing him in his pain, he says to me suddenly, "I hardly think you know who I am. I don't wish to impose upon you. I am a rebel soldier." I said I did not know that, but it made no difference. Visiting him daily for about 2 weeks after that, while he lived, death had marked him and he was quite alone. I loved him much, always kissed him, and he did me. In an adjoining ward I found his brother, an officer of rank, a Union soldier, a brave and religious man, Colonel Clifton K. Prentice, 6th Maryland Infantry, 6th Corps, wounded in one of the engagements at Petersburg, April 2nd, lingered, suffered much, died in Brooklyn, August 20th, 65. It was the same battle, both were hit. One was a strong Unionist, the other Secesh. Both fought on their respective sides, both badly wounded, and both brought together here after a separation of 4 years. Each died for his cause. During those 3 years in hospital, camp, or field, I made over 600 visits or tours, and went, as I estimate, counting all, among from 80,000 to 100,000 of the wounded and sick, as sustainer of spirit and body in some degree in time of need. These visits varied from an hour or two to all day or night, for with dear or critical cases, I generally watched all night. Sometimes I took up my quarters in the hospital and slept or watched there several nights in succession. Those 3 years I consider the greatest privilege and satisfaction, with all their feverish excitements and physical deprivations and lamentable sights, and of course the most profound lesson of my life. I can say that in my ministerings I comprehended all, whoever came in my way, northern or southern, and slighted none. It aroused and brought out and decided undreamed of depths of emotion. It has given me my most fervent views of the true ensemble and extent of the States. While I was with wounded and sick in thousands of cases from the New England states, and from New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, and from Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and all the western states, I was with more or less from all the states, north and south, without exception. I was with many rebel officers and men among our wounded, and gave them always what I had, and tried to cheer them the same as any. I was among the army teamsters considerably, and indeed always found myself drawn to them. Among the black soldiers, wounded or sick, I also took my way whenever in their neighborhood, and did what I could for them. Race of Veterans. Race of Veterans, Race of Victors. Race of the soil, ready for conflict, Race of the conquering march. No more credulity's race, abiding tempered race. Race henceforth owning no law but the law of itself, race of passion and the storm. World, take good notice. World, take good notice. Silver stars fading, milky hue ripped, weft of white detaching, coals 38, baleful and burning, scarlet, significant, hands-off warning, now and henceforth flaunt from these shores. Lo, victress on the peaks. Lo, victress on the peaks, where thou with mighty brow regarding the world, O Libertad, that vainly conspired against thee, out of its countless beleaguering toils, after thwarting them all, dominant with the dazzling sun around thee, flauntest now unharmed in immortal soundness and bloom, lo, in these hours supreme, no poem proud I chanting bring to thee, nor mastery's rapturous verse, but a cluster containing night's darkness and blood-dripping wounds and psalms of the dead. The dead in this war, there they lie, strewing the fields and woods and valleys and battlefields of the South, Virginia, the Peninsula, Malvern Hill and Fair Oaks, the banks of the Chickahominy, the terraces of Fredericksburg, Antietam Bridge, the grisly ravines of Manassas, the bloody promenade of the Wilderness, the varieties of the strayed dead. The estimate of the War Department is 25,000 national soldiers killed in battle and never buried at all, 5,000 drowned, 15,000 inhumed by strangers or on the march in haste in hitherto unfound localities, 2,000 graves covered by sand and mud by Mississippi freshets, 3,000 carried away by caving in of banks and so forth. Gettysburg, the West, Southwest, Vicksburg, Chattanooga, the trenches of Petersburg, the numberless battles, camps, hospitals everywhere, the crop reaped by the mighty reapers, typhoid, dysentery, inflammations, and blackest and loathsomest of all, the dead and living burial pits, the prison pens of Andersonville, Salisbury, Belle Isle, and so forth. Not Dante's pictured hell and all its woes, its degradations, filthy torments, excelled those prisons. The dead, our dead, or south or north, ours all finally dear to me, or east or west, Atlantic coast or Mississippi Valley, somewhere they crawled to die alone in bushes, low gullies, or on the side of hills. There, in secluded spots, their skeletons, bleached bones, tufts of hair, buttons, fragments of clothing are occasionally found yet. Our young men, once so handsome and so joyous, taken from us, the son from the mother, the husband from the wife, the dear friend from the dear friend, the clusters of camp graves in Georgia, the Carolinas, and in Tennessee, the single graves left in the woods or by the roadside, hundreds, thousands obliterated. The corpses floated down the rivers and caught and lodged. Dozens, scores floated down the upper Potomac after the cavalry engagements, the pursuit of Lee following Gettysburg. Some lie at the bottom of the sea. The general million and the special cemeteries in almost all the states, the infinite dead. The land entire, saturated, perfumed with their impalpable ashes exhalation, in nature's chemistry distilled, and shall be so forever in every future grain of wheat and ear of corn, and every flower that grows in every breath we draw. Not only northern dead leavening southern soil, thousands, aye, tens of thousands of southerners crumble today in northern earth. And everywhere among these countless graves, everywhere in the many soldier cemeteries of the nation, there are now, I believe, over 70 of them, as at the time in the vast trenches, the depositories of slain, northern and southern, after the great battles. Not only where the scathing trail passed those years, but radiating since in all the peaceful quarters of the land, we see, and ages yet may see, on monuments and gravestones, singly or in masses, to thousands or tens of thousands, the significant word, unknown. And so, goodbye to the war. I know not how it may have been or may be to others. To me, the main interest I found, and still on recollection find, in the rank and file of the armies, both sides, and in those specimens amid the hospitals, and even the dead on the field. Future years will never know the seething hell and the black infernal background of countless minor scenes and interiors, not the official surface courteousness of the generals, not the few great battles of the secession war. And it is best they should not. The real war will never get in the books. In the mushy influences of current times, too, the fervid atmosphere and typical events of those years are in danger of being totally forgotten. I have at night watched by the side of a sick man in the hospital, one who could not live many hours. I have seen his eyes flash and burn as he raised himself and recurred to the cruelties on his surrendered brother and mutilations of the corpse afterward. Such was the war. It was not a quadrille in a ballroom. Its interior history will not only never be written, its practicality, minutiae of deeds and passions will never be even suggested. The actual soldier of 1862-65, North and South, with all his ways, his incredible dauntlessness, habits, practices, tastes, language, his fierce friendship, his appetite, rankness, his superb strength and animality, lawless gait, and a hundred unnamed lights and shades of camp, I say, will never be written. Perhaps must not and should not be. The preceding notes may furnish a few stray glimpses into that life, and into those lurid interiors never to be fully conveyed to the future. The hospital part of the drama from 61 to 65 deserves indeed to be recorded. Of that many-threaded drama, with its sudden and strange surprises, its confounding of prophecies, its moments of despair, the dread of foreign interference, the interminable campaigns, the bloody battles, the mighty and cumbrous and green armies, the drafts and bounties, the immense money expenditure, like a heavy pouring constant rain, with over the whole land, the last 3 years of the struggle, an unending universal mourning wail of women, parents, orphans, the marrow of the tragedy concentrated in those army hospitals. It seems sometimes as if the whole interest of the land, north and south, was one vast central hospital, and all the rest of the affair but flanges. Those forming the untold and unwritten history of the war, infinitely greater, like life's, than the few scraps and distortions that are ever told or written. Think how much and of importance will be, how much civic and military has already been buried in the grave in eternal darkness. Old war dreams. In midnight sleep of many a face of anguish, of the look at first of the mortally wounded, of that indescribable look, of the dead on their backs with arms extended wide, I dream, I dream, I dream. Of scenes of nature, fields and mountains, of skies so beauteous after a storm, and at night the moon so unearthly bright, shining sweetly, shining down where we dig the trenches and gather the heaps, I dream, I dream, I dream. Long have they passed, faces and trenches and fields, where through the carnage I moved with a callous composure, or away from the fallen. Onward I sped at the time, but now of their forms at night, I dream, I dream, I dream.